thank you for taking the time to listen to this life-changing message from the Ministry of Faith Bible Chapel. We hope this message will encourage you in all parts of your life. At the end of this message, you will hear more information on how to contact our church family, as well as directions for you to visit us for any of our worship services. Until then, join us for the service in progress.
We have the privilege this evening of coming together as Gentiles to learn about and to remember and to celebrate the Jewish holiday of Purim. Purim falls every year on the 14th day of the Hebrew month of Adar, which you have to remember in the Hebrew, they have a lunar calendar where we have a Gregorian calendar that's based on the sun. So their day of the month moves around each year depending on when the moon falls. So it's usually sometime between mid-February and mid-March that we have the holiday of Purim. As Brannon mentioned in her worship time earlier, the holiday of Purim is the most festive and joy-filled holiday of all the Jewish holidays. It's something that all families very much look forward to each year, and it's celebrated in several different ways. I just want to share a few of those with you before we take time to recount the story, and then talk about what we, as Christians in 2013, can learn and what God has for us today through the holiday of Purim. The story of Purim is read, the scroll is opened, and it is recounted because it's the story that tells about the deliverance of the Jewish people from destruction by the enemy. And it reminds them of God's faithfulness and that he promised through his covenant that there would always be a relationship between he and the Jewish people. And to this day, that relationship and that covenant stands. And Purim is the reminder that the enemy comes against the Jewish people on a daily basis to try and destroy that covenant and to try and remove them from God's plan. But God is not going to let that happen. So there's great joy and great celebration. The story is read, and when the names of the characters are read, when Mordecai's name is read, everyone cheers and hollers because he's the hero of the story. When Haman's name is read, who's the nasty guy, boos and hisses, and they have groggers that they spin around, and they make all the noise that they can to try and drown out his name. Because the truth is, the Jewish people don't want to remember the name of Haman because of what he intended for the Jewish people. It's celebrated through parties. Children dress up as the characters of the story of Queen Esther and Mordecai, and they dress up as characters of the day, and they have parades, and they have parties at school. They celebrate with particular foods. Tonight, after the end of service, in our atrium, we're going to have some chamentoshen, which is traditional dessert, a pastry that's made at the time of Purim, that Jewish people all over the world will be baking and eating and celebrating in the next few days. So tonight, we just want to take a moment to stop and remember the story of Purim, to remember what God did and what God still does for us today, and how we can learn from it, and that we can follow in the footsteps of God, and we can allow him to work in our lives. So we're going to begin this evening with a movie clip. We're going to tell you the story of Esther and the story of Purim through clips from a movie called One Night with the King, which came out several years ago, and then have some firsthand accounts from some of the characters that will be a part of tonight's service, as well as some testimonies of some folks in our church who are dealing with things in their lives today, like a modern-day story of Esther. So we're going to start with a movie clip and hope that you enjoy the teaching of Purim, and we'll be back to talk to you about it at the end in just a little bit. So enjoy.
From whence comes the purpose of a person's life? Come it by chance, a casting of the lot? Or does a call of destiny beckon to each of us? Many have wondered about my little Hadassah and why a simple Jewish orphan was chosen to stand against the annihilation of her people. And yet the mystery of the girl most known as Esther begins not where one might think, but 500 years earlier with a single act of disobedience. King Saul of the Israelites had been sent by the prophet Samuel to wipe out an ancient child-sacrificing enemy. So pervasive was their evil that not even their oxen nor sheep were to be spared. And above all, no survivors left breathing.
My lord, I give you Agag, king of the Amalekites. We have also seized for you his livestock, even his queen.
What dark portents bid me haste across this land of ours?
How would you accuse me now, O prophet? I carried out your lord's command.
Then why do my ears ring with the lowing of oxen and the bleating of sheep?
Your Majesty, the Amalekite queen. She's escaped.
We have the king. What is one woman?
You fool. She is with child.
The prophet Samuel put a swift end to King Agag. Agag's queen, fleeing with a seed of vengeance growing within her, the Jews never found.
Look. Hadas always dreaming. Maybe. Here then, you be the princess.
While many Jews had forgotten the acts of centuries past, the descendants of Agag had not. For Agag's queen did indeed survive and gave birth to a son. And she forged for him a mark, prophesying that one day an Agagite would arise, a descendant of Agag, who would finally exact vengeance upon the Jews.
A story!
You want a story?
Haman the Agagite was proclaimed a prince of the faith to inherit Admantha's house, wealth, prestige, and power.
Pieces are falling into place. We have spoken of one by one.
Soothsaying does not become you, Haman.
No, my darling, I speak of the truth, not of stars. My burden I would not wish on any man. The blood of my forefathers will be avenged, and the gods will smile down on our sons for our obedience.
Then are you mad? This is your plan?
It is not that our allies are unwilling, my lord, but they have not fared well. A storm has robbed the Phoenicians of a good part of their fleet. Carthage finds herself short in timber with which to complete our warships.
Surely the fate of the Empire does not hinge on money.
Are you ready to furnish it, then?
No, not I, my lord. But I am aware of traitors within our borders that could.
The Jews? We are not children.
Nevertheless, the money may be raised by the confiscation of Jewish wealth and property.
And the Jews will just hand it over without a fight?
No, of course not. First, we must kill them all. Every last one of them. It is the only way to ensure they do not rise up and seek revenge.
He speaks of women and children, my lord.
Yes, women and children.
The casting of the lot. The poor.
It has determined upon which day all the Jews of the kingdom will be slain. This day is to be the 13th day of the month of Adar, according to the calendar of the Jews.
Prince! The annihilation of a people can only be authorized by one who bears the signet of the king himself.
Thus letters were sent into all the land to slay and annihilate all the Jews. On the 13th of Adar, some 6 weeks hence, both young and old, men, women, and even children, and to plunder all of their possessions for the sake of the crown.
Summon she comes before the king.
She does.
Is protocol not broken?
Yes, protocol has been broken down.
Mockery.
Perhaps not how you had hoped it would end. Imagined you that I would beg. Think you I will beg? Beg for my life?
Beg like my forefather Agag before your Saul.
I beg for forgiveness!
Spare me! Spare me!
Would he also assault the queen?
My wife!
Why am I not in my house?
Harbona has informed me that the gallows pole stands in Haman's yard, even as we speak, apparently intended for one Mordecai, the Jew.
Thus, with one faithful act, has a new generation redeemed the time of centuries past and stepped into their destiny.
On this day, I give you your new prince and master of audiences, Mordecai Ben-Jair.
On the day appointed for their destruction, all Jews shall have the right to protect themselves and shall be entitled to take all the property of their attackers.
And I send forth this story, enjoining all to keep the day of feasting and gladness, a celebration to be passed on and retold through every generation, to be known as Purim, or the casting of the poor that determined its time. While we continue onward in the face of a world filled with uncertainty, we can rejoice, for hidden within its mysteries is the honor of a king. Thus dictated, I order this decree sent out under the great seal of Mordecai, Prince of Persia, a Jew.
I am Mordecai, son of Yair, of the tribe of Benjamin. My family and I were exiled from Jerusalem to Babylon under the reign of King Nebuchadnezzar. My niece, my cousin Hadassah, she lost her parents, and she was raised by us as if she was our own daughter. She has grown to be a true beauty. We serve here now under King Xerxes, here in Susa in Iran. His kingdom stretches all the way from India to Ethiopia. Oh, great king, may you reign forever. But what a king he is. He decided to have a feast. It went on for 180 days, eating, drinking, amazing amount of food. The only rule was that none could be required to eat or drink more than they want. Let me tell you, they all wanted a lot. At the height of the festivities, the king called for his queen so he could show her to his friends. The queen refused. Husbands cannot allow their wives to refuse. So the king decided immediately to remove her as queen. The next day, he sobered up, and he was having second thoughts about removing his queen. So one of his advisors came up with the idea of a beauty pageant. All the young women would be brought before the king, and he would choose from among them who would be his queen. Of course, my Hadassah, my beautiful Hadassah, would be one of those in the competition. They changed her name to Esther. It means star, and what a star she was. She shone brightly, so brightly that she was chosen to be the queen. They changed her name to Esther, and I told her to tell no one that she was a Jew or that she was our daughter. Such it is with palace intrigue. One can never be too careful. One day, I was at the city gates, and I heard two of the king's most trusted eunuchs plotting to assassinate him. I got the information to Queen Esther, and the plot was foiled. You'd think such great information would have netted me a wonderful reward, but not so much, not even a thank you. I did the right thing, but sometimes when you do the right thing, all it does is create another problem. Haman is such a problem. He is now the king's most trusted advisor. Everyone must bow to Haman. He is not my king, and I will not bow to him. I must be true to what I believe in.
Never give in. Never give in. Never, never, never. In nothing, great or small, large or petty, never give in except to convictions of honor and good sense. Never yield to force. Never yield to the apparently overwhelming might of the enemy.
To annihilate the Jews has been issued.
stamped and approved by the king. The law itself cannot be reversed. How do I fight this? How can I change what has already been set in motion? How? Mordecai is right, of course. I must speak with the king. I must beg for mercy and plead with him for the lives of my people. But Lord, the entire province knows. For me to approach the king without being summoned, there is but one law. If he does not lower his golden scepter to me, I will be put to death. It's already been 30 days since I have been summoned before the king. His favor with me has diminished. Is there no other to stand for my people before the king? Is it true, Lord? Have you placed me here in this position for this very moment? I have no strength against the king's guards. I have no power to change the king's laws. I have not even the favor of the king himself. But for my people, I will go. And if I must die, I will die. For you have surely placed me here for such a time as this. I go with nothing but what you give me, Lord. I go as David did before Goliath and the Philistines.
Good evening. My name is Libby Szabo, and I'm a state representative here in House District 27. Esther's famous quote was, "For such a time as this." And I believe we were all put in this place at this time for his purpose. If you would have asked me 5 years ago if I would be serving the people of Colorado at the state capitol, I would have laughed. And God certainly laughs. He has a sense of humor. It's a very interesting place to be at this time of age. There are a lot of issues that are coming to the forefront that are tough decisions. This year, I might have to vote on over 800 bills. Some of them are bills that are dear to our hearts. Some of them are bills that are good for business, don't seem spiritual in nature. But what I've learned in my last 2 years of being at the state capitol is that I was called to do this for a purpose. Just like I was called to be a mom and a wife years ago, doing very different duties than I'm doing right now. But I was called to do this to serve the 77,000 people in House District 27, to act and to do as the God who called me to do this. Like I said, I don't know if you're watching the news, but there are some very tough decisions to be made. There's many arguments for something or against something. And if I don't be careful, and if I don't watch my heart, I could be easily swayed. I ask you all, I covet your prayers. I need your prayers. It's a tough place to be at this time of age. If God called me to be here, I need to use his laws and his rules to govern his people. And that's what Esther did. She was just a young girl chosen by a king. But she knew the God she served, and she knew the people she served. Now, am I going to go out and save a whole nation or even a house district? Probably not. But I have the same calling on my life, as we all do, to do what God called us, and to do it with honor and respect and courage. Sometimes it's hard to do the right thing, but it's so, so important that we do. So always remember that you are all called for such a time as this.
It's good to be the king, but it's not at all a safe profession. Every day, someone comes to me and asks me to sign something, or someone else asks me to do something and approve something for them that is in their best interest, but not at all in my best interest. Wretched, selfish people. One time, my first queen, I called her, summoned her to be in my presence, and she refused to come. She didn't stay queen for long, I can promise you that. Then, two of my palace eunuchs, they're conspiring to kill me, and somebody tells my new queen, the beautiful Queen Esther, about it, and she helps me to stop that plot dead in its tracks. Then, my most trusted advisor, he convinces me to kill all of the Jews in my realm. Again, the beautiful Queen Esther stepped in, foiled his plot, and saved me from committing an act that surely would have become my downfall. It is good to be the queen, especially with a queen like Esther.
Many years ago, I was a very evil man. My wife, Pat, and I had been married for almost 10 years. My son, Eric, was 5 years old. My Haman was not a person, but it was more like the devil sitting on my shoulder. And he would whisper to me and tell me how unhappy I was. And he would tell me that you needed to get out into the world and you needed to do what the world was doing because they were partying, they were having fun. And you need to find somebody to love because you don't love your wife, that's for sure. And so that's what I decided to do. I was drinking very heavily at the time, and I became an adulterer. And the problem that was added to it is I fell in love with the woman that I was having an affair with. At the time, I never physically abused Pat, my wife, but mentally I could just tear her apart. It was almost a game for me to get home from work to see how fast I could make her cry, and I was good at it. Finally, one day I told her, I said, look, we need to get a divorce. This just isn't working. And she, of course, cried. And then when she settled down some, she told me that, look, she made a commitment when we got married that she told God I would stay with him for richer, for poorer, for better or for worse. And this was by far the worst time in our life. But she was, even though her family was telling her to divorce the bum, she hung in there. But finally I said to her, one day, this is what I want for a settlement. And before I could get the sentence out, she said, Lynn, this is all I want. I just want Eric. I want Eric in our clothes, my clothes. She says, I want the portable TV and I want the old car. And some of you out there know Pat real well. And you know she's a woman of integrity. And that whatever she said, she would do. And I thought, wow, I'm going to get it all. And I couldn't hardly wait. She also said, I'm not going to stop you from getting a divorce, but I'm not going to help you. You're going to have to go to the lawyer. You're going to have to get the papers together. You're going to have to do it all. bring them to me and I'll reluctantly sign them, but that's as far as I'm going to go. So I finally set up a day when I was going to leave. And it was a few weeks down the road, and it was a Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday that I had off. And that Thursday, before this happened, Pat said, would you do me one more favor? Would you go see this certain pastor at this certain church? And I thought for a minute, hey, this could be good for me. I selfishly thought, now I could tell my family and friends that, hey, I went to counseling. This has to, I tried, but it didn't work. But I told Pat she had to set up the date. She had to set up the time. And if I could make it, I'd go. And if I can't, I won't. Well, that Thursday came, and I couldn't think of a way to get out of it. And so I went and jumped in the car, and I headed down to this pastor's church. And as I was backing out of the driveway, little did I know, but Pat told me later, she said, I got on the phone and I called Sharon, my next door neighbor, and I said, pray for Lynn, because he's going down to see the pastor. And then she called some friends she had met 2 or 3 months before that by the name of Dick and Carol Prevost. And some of you know that couple because they've gone to this church for 40 years or so. And she told them to pray for me. But I could have cared less. They could pray all they wanted. My heart was set. I had my girlfriend's key in my pocket to her apartment, and I was planning on living with her until I left, until the divorce was final, and then Pat was out of the house. I got down to the church, and the pastor took me back to his room, to his office, and he told me to sit on the couch, and he sat at his desk, at his chair behind his desk, and he said, what's going on? And so I shared with him just about everything that had happened. I told him I didn't love my wife. I wanted nothing to do with her. If something happened to her, I probably wouldn't even shed a tear. I was in love with somebody else. And there was only one answer to this, and that was a divorce. He then told me, he said, what God expected, what he wanted of marriage and what he thought of divorce. And I knew what that was because I was raised in a Lutheran church and I went to a Lutheran school for 5 years. We had catechism and we had Bible study 3 times a week, but God was 50 billion miles away, taking care of the universe. I believe there was a God, but he wasn't taking care of Lynn. And so when I got through telling my story and the pastor got through telling his story, I was thinking, let's get this over with and get out of here. But then he said to me, he says, Lynn, would you let me pray with you before you leave? And I'm thinking, well, come on. But I said, okay. So he got up and came around and sat on the couch beside me and grabbed my hands. And I thought, whoa, this isn't the way we normally do things. But I didn't pull my hands back. What he said 34 years ago, I don't know what he said. What I do know for a fact is that God came into that room, not because I wanted him to, but because people were praying. I never saw God physically, but I felt him. The warmth that came around me was unbelievable. And I knew 2 things right away. I knew that God loved me. He loved me very much. And I knew he wanted me to stay with Pat. And I can't tell you how angry I was. I couldn't get out of the building fast enough. I got in my car and I started home, and on the way home with tears going down my cheek, I literally shook my fist at God. I said, what right do you have coming into my life now? I'm not in love with that woman. I'm in love with somebody else, and you don't have any right to do this. Well, by the time I got home, I had made a commitment to God. I said, look, I'll stay with her for a year, but if I don't love her in a year, I'm out of here. And that's all he expected of me. During that year, I cannot tell you the love that he put in my heart for Pat. It's just beyond belief. That's 34 years ago. And it's still there. And it grows every year. It's by the grace of God that I can stand up here and talk to you tonight because I should have had a lightning bolt strike me on the way home 34 years ago. And it's by the grace of God that we're going to celebrate our 45th wedding anniversary this summer.
How can this be? Just yesterday, I was on top of the world. I had land, money, prestige, honor. I, Haman, had found personal favor with King Xerxes. The king himself had elevated me to a position of the highest honor, higher than any of the other nobles in the land. He had declared that everyone, even the highest officials, should bow down to me and pay tribute to me. I don't understand how in just a matter of a few short hours, I could go from a man of the highest honor with the king's blessing to this, a man awaiting his execution. It's Mordecai who should die. It's all of those self-righteous Jews who are destroying our land, destroying our way of life. They should be looking out over these gallows. I had issued a decree, an edict approved by the king. All of the Jews, every man, woman, and child would be put to death. The plan had been put into motion. Oh, I hate these people. I detest them. They have no place in this world as far as I'm concerned. I built these gallows for Mordecai. But instead, it shall be I who will be hung. My fate is sealed. The king has declared that I should die. And it's all because of my anger towards Mordecai and the Jews. Could it be that the God these Jews bow down to had something to do with this? Could there really be something to this God that Mordecai claims to follow? All of the evil that I intended for Mordecai and the Jews has come back on me. The gallows that I built with my hand, with my anger, I will die on.
I'm Cheryl Morrison, and of all of the characters in the Purim story, the one you least want to have to identify with is Haman. Haman was driven by hatred, hatred for the Jews that he'd learned as a child. It was generational hatred. Probably it was a generational curse. That hatred drove him to want to annihilate the Jews, to want to harm them, to punish them. But unfortunately, I can identify with Haman. I was raised anti-Semitic. As a small child, I went to Sunday school and I heard the word Jew. I'd never heard that word in my life. So I went home and I asked my family, what's a Jew? And I got an earful. I was told some of the most vile things that a child could ever hear about another human being. And unfortunately, from what I was taught as a child, I believed it, and I believed it into my young adulthood. I actually had never even met a Jew. I'm from a small town in Wyoming. There wasn't a Jew probably within 100 miles of us. But it was what I'd been taught, and it's what I believed. Every time I heard the word Jew, my mind went to those vile things that I'd been told as a child. But then God intervened in my life, and I came to Faith Bible Chapel. The first time I came to the church and I felt the love of God, I knew that I was in a place that I was going to hear the truth. And shortly after that, I was taught that the Jews were God's chosen people, that he loved them, and that he had a plan for them. At that time, Faith Bible Chapel was a pretty small church, and we were on West 59th Place in Arvada in an old Southern Baptist church. And I can still see it today, the pew I was sitting in, as I turned around and knelt and asked God to forgive me for what I had believed about the Jews and to set me free. And I always say I think it is a pretty funny joke on the devil that this anti-Semitic girl became a raging Zionist. And the reason that I'm not here to share my story in person is Pastor George and I are in San Antonio attending a Christians United for Israel leadership conference. God is the deliverer. He delivered me from a lie about the Jews and gave me a desperate love in my heart for them. But I want to tell you that the same God that delivered me from anti-Semitism can deliver anybody, either you or somebody that you're praying for, from wrong thinking, from hateful thinking. God is the deliverer. And though Haman did not experience that deliverance, you and I can.
Amen. So tonight, we've rehearsed the book of Esther. We've learned about God's love for his people. That he's the God who delivers. He's faithful to his word. He's faithful to the covenant he made with the Jewish people. And even though the enemy pushes hard to try and destroy that, God will not let that happen because he's a man of his word. So it's easy to hear and just kind of tuck that away and say, oh, that's awesome. God is good. For such a time as this, we've all heard that. We know that God has placed each of us where we are in our life at this point in time because God has a specific plan and something that he has designed each of us to do to further his kingdom. So we could go home and say, that was great. It's good to be reminded each year, but I want to invite you to think about some other things tonight. And we're going to take a moment to have a time of action, a time of reflection, a time of allowing God to move in each of our lives in a unique and different way that each of us needs from him tonight. Some of the other things that we can learn from this story that aren't always the front things that we talk about when you talk about the story of Esther and the story of Purim. From Mordecai, we can learn he was a man who did what was right in foiling the plot to destroy the king, even though he didn't get any recognition for it. He still did the right thing because it was the right thing to do. From Esther, we learn great courage. She knew that what she was doing, to go in and approach the king without him asking her to come, could mean a certain death. But she was willing to overcome the fear that it might cost her life, to stand up and be brave, and to know that she might be the only hope of her people. So even though she was probably scared to death, she did it. From Haman, we learn about what can happen when you let a root of bitterness grow in your heart. And that you don't allow God to cut that root off and you let it thrive. And it can take you to places and cause you to do things that you never dreamed you would do and places that you never dreamt you would find yourself.
We hope that this message has spoken something personal to you. If you would like more information about our church family or service times, please call us at 303-424-2121 or visit us at our website, www.fbci.org. Faith Bible Chapel currently meets in our Family Worship Center, located on the corner of 62nd Avenue and Ward Road.